In the book of Acts, the 14th chapter, I've been tracking along with the journey of Paul. And in Paul's journey, it's just getting started. His name's just been changed. He's moving from city to city. He's taking the good news. He's proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ wherever he goes. The apostles have partnered him up with Barnabas and sent them out with his blessing. Last time that we talked about his going to Paul and Barnabas going to Iconium and how well or not that went. We know that as they were there, there was just a lot of stirring. And as the gospel message was being not preached, but as it was being embraced, as the church that ruled and dominated the culture of that day, or those that worshiped the pagan gods, they saw this massive following begin to come in line with the good news, the gospel. They were beginning to embrace Jesus Christ as their Savior. It didn't set well, and so there was uprisings all over. And we find this is a common occurrence with Paul, that trouble seems to find him wherever he is. Not of his own doing. The poor guy is just doing what God told him to do. And he finds all of these issues. This week in the 14th chapter, beginning with verse 8, we find that Paul and Barnabas have left Iconium and they came to this next city. They were headed to Lystra and Derbe. And so that's where we're going to pick up this morning. Now at Lystra, there was a man sitting who could not use his feet. And this is beginning with verse 8. He was crippled from birth and had never walked. He listened to Paul speaking. And Paul looked intently at him, and seeing that he had faith to be made well, said in a loud voice, "Stand upright on your feet." And he sprang up, and he began walking. We find here that there is this miracle that is being documented. Now, I am absolutely convinced that in this time frame, there were dozens, hundreds, maybe even thousands more miracles happening all around the work. And we even read last week in the text that the signs and the wonders of God's Spirit followed Paul and Barnabas as they taught, as they proclaimed the good news of Jesus Christ. When we proclaim the gospel, there is an amazing power, not of our own, not of ourselves, but the power of God's Holy Spirit to transform the words that come out of our mouth into understanding and buy-in in the heart of the hearer. That's always my prayer as I proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ, that you don't hear my word, that you don't hear what I have to say, but the Spirit of God compels you through that, and he draws you to himself. That the Spirit of God ministers to your need and that you are at that one-on-one. There'd be nothing that I would love and enjoy more than to speak to you on a Sunday morning and know that every single one of us is in a one-on-one with God at this very moment. How incredible would that be? Because it is the Spirit of God that brings understanding and wisdom. So as Paul is speaking, he looks out and he sees this man that had been crippled since birth. His feet were distorted. He had never, never in his life walked. Now, there are some people that have walked before, and because of injury or accident, most of us remember and know of Johnny Erickson Tada. I was blessed as a kid, actually. The church that we attended, that was on one of the stops that she made. And so this was right when she had started doing some drawings with her mouth, and it was just kind of the ink drawings. But I remember as a kid, as a teenager, the specific blessing of being able to help lift her into our house and have dinner with her. It was just one of those amazing things. But she remembered what it was like to walk. She talked, you know, and even though she gave God the glory, she missed the mobility that she had before the accident, before she broke her neck and was paralyzed. This man had never walked. Paul looked as he was speaking. Now, I'm pretty intentional about getting the lights just where they are today because I like to see you while I'm speaking. So if you're sleeping, I'm going to know it. I came from Canada. I spent 6 years in Canada, and most all of them guys that came were farmers. And during the harvest season, and I just had to block it out because most of those guys that ran their combines all night long, some of them just took a break long enough to come to church on Sunday morning before they'd go back out. And you know, they were at church physically, but they were sleeping. Paul is watching his listeners. He's finding out, am I making sense? Is the Spirit of God using what I'm saying? And then this text, we find an amazing thing. Paul saw in this man faith to be healed. Now, I want to back up for just a second and talk about our faith. And that's one of the questions that I put in your Lifestyle 7 in the bulletin this week is, what kind of faith does it take to be healed? And there's all kinds of theories on that. There's all kinds of people that'll tell you, this is how you have to believe, and this is how you have to think, and this is the mental preparedness that you have to go through. And if you're going to be healed, you can never doubt, and you have to believe, and you have to just be completely focused. And I say that we're missing the mark when we put the faith action on us. It is God who heals. The real question is not do we have faith to be healed, because that's something that we try and conjure up. The more we live with an issue or the more we go in a situation, we think, if I had more faith, and we beat ourselves up because situations don't change, and then we look at our faith and we go, oh, I'm so weak and I don't have the faith that I need. Think about this. If we could completely just trust Jesus for whatever the outcome is, life would be so much better for us. If we could learn to not depend on self for faith, but depend on Him in faith, He will change, transform our lives. We may never get a physical healing that we're asking for. We may live with a thorn in our flesh like Paul did. We may live in a situation longer than we want to, but we can have this assurance that Jesus Christ, His Spirit, is with us through thick and thin. He is there for us. That's the faith that Paul saw in this lame man's face. Just, he was radiating this faith. He was saying to Paul, I believe this Jesus that you're talking about. I believe the gospel message. I believe that He rose from the dead. I believe that He became the sacrifice for my sin. I believe that by accepting Him, I can spend eternity. I will partner in the resurrection with Him. I will be with Him for all ages. Because of that faith, Paul says, stand up, walk. And he jumps and he runs. Beginning in verse 11. And when the crowd saw what Paul had done, they lifted up their voices, saying in Lycaonian, the gods have come down to us in the likeness of men. Barnabas they called Zeus and Paul Hermes, because he was the chief speaker. Now, understanding the culture of that day, everybody was worshiping everything. So if you weren't a Christian, it is absolute, absolute solid that you were worshiping something other than the one true God. This was a culture that worshiped everything. This was a culture that they formed graven images and they made all kinds of idols. And so as these guys come into the city and they begin to preach, and as this lame man gets up and walks, they lift up their voices. Why? Because this is the culture they lived in. They were expecting. Now, they are wrong, but they lived in this culture where they were expecting that the gods would take human form and come down and rescue them and heal them and bring bounty to them and do all these things for them. They began saying, This is Zeus. This is Zeus. And this is Hermes. It's amazing, isn't it? How we would step back and say, how ridiculous is that? But looking at the culture that we live in, looking at the things we worship in Seattle and the things that there are gods everywhere around Seattle. There may not be statues, a lot of times there is. There may not be pictures, but there are gods in human form, and I use gods in a lowercase, not uppercase. That they are they're mere men and mere women, but culture looks at them like gods. I really like the Marvel comic and superhero movies that are coming out. I like when they keep them clean enough that you can take the whole family, and I like that genre of movie. It's the current day Gladiators, and that's my second. I mean, if I had to pick all time favorites, it would be like the in the medieval swordplay days. I like that. But in our culture, you know, we have all of these Thor and Spider-Man and Black Panther now, and it's not just men, it's women it's across the board. We are worshiping all of these. Well, I say worshiping. Well, maybe we are. We just got done with a harvest party, and you would be surprised how many of our little guys and gals came dressed like superheroes, like gods in the form of man. They came with their capes on, and they came with their suits on, and during the week when I'm standing at the door greeting families, kids will come in and they'll open their jacket and they'll stand there and they got their new Batman shirt on. We're intrigued with gods in the form of men come to us to rescue us and to save us. So it's not really ridiculous that in that day they would say, look at the powers these guys have. Now, they weren't educated in the way that God had moved and that they were looking at, this is what gods do when they come in the form of man. This is what we've been told that a god will do. Let's look a little bit farther. And the priest of Zeus, whose temple was at the entrance of the city, brought oxen and garlands to the gates and wanted to offer sacrifice with the crowds. But when the apostles, Barnabas and Paul, heard of it, they tore their garments, rushed into the crowd, crying out. Now, this was like an absolute contradiction to what they were preaching. They were accusing them of preaching self. They were accusing them of being gods. That these two men of their own power, these two men, they're proclaiming this good news, but along with it is this power that we expect to come from the gods to men. So I find it interesting that it really offended Paul and Barnabas to the point where they rent their clothes. They were telling everybody around, I'm serious about this. You cannot do this. You cannot put me on a pedestal. You can't set me up there. It's not us. It's not our message. It's the message of Christ that is powerful. It's not us. And so they're out working the crowd. The best way to get somebody's attention when the crowd is clamoring, you just think about this. When the crowd is clamoring, worship, worship, and their honor and praise Zeus, it's the best way to get somebody's attention is to get right down into the crowd and look them in the eye and plead your case. We are not gods. Look at me. It hurts when you pinch me. I bleed just like everybody else. I am human. I'm human. Beginning in verse 15. Men, why do they do? Why are you doing these things? We also are men of like nature with you, and bring you good news that you should turn from the vain things to a living God who made the heaven and earth and the sea and all that is in them. In past generations, he allowed nations to walk in their own ways. And next text, he did not leave himself without witness, for he did good by giving you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons, satisfying your hearts with food and gladness. Even with these words, they scarcely restrained the people from offering sacrifice to them. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I mean, for some of us, it might feel pretty nice. They love me so much, they want to worship me. My granddaughter, who you've been following along with the story, is back in my daughter's life now, and she actually got to go back to South Carolina this weekend. They're driving home right now, actually, and they're taking her to Disney next month, and just, it's amazing. But as she showed up for this visit and this weekend that they just went to, my daughter went, oh my goodness, she dressed like a little diva. She had this faux fur, she had all of this. She's 9 years old. And she's like all in this world of glamour and all this stuff. Why? Because in this culture, we elevate people by status of appearance. We elevate people by status of what they have. And she was playing on the playground, and she was in this museum with her brothers, and she said, I can't get my hair dirty. And she was talking about her jacket. Because if I get it dirty, I'll have to get a new one. In her mind, dirt equates to got to get rid of it and get a brand new one. They were living in this culture at this time where people were wanting to sacrifice. It's not so different from today. It's not so different from today. People are elevated to hero status that quick. Think about our football players. I heard rumor that the Seahawks are planning to win today. And, you know, we watch them and we elevate them to superhuman status. And we go, this guy is invincible. And then they get hurt. And what happens? You know, they just kind of fall off the radar. When you're living the dream, and Paul and Barnabas knew this, when you're living the dream, when you're being recognized as somebody, when you are the hero, when you are that person that's being elevated up, it does feel good for a bit. But it only takes a second. It only takes a second for you to be lowered down to the status of a man. Think about it. You go to a new job, and you know what you're doing. And almost immediately, the sales are up, and different things are happening, and you're just acing what you're doing. And it's just like amazing, and your bosses are coming by patting you on the back, and people are walking by going, let's go for coffee. I want to pick your brain. I need some information. I need to learn how in the world are you doing this. You're amazing. And then the bottom falls out, and the sales are lousy. Or here's a big one. At first, they loved your personality. They loved your first initial impression. They loved who you were. Now they get to know you. Now they're really getting to know the core of who you are, and they're going, not so good anymore. I used to think that they were like this super great, amazing, awesome person. And now I'm stepping away and I'm going, oh, I don't like them anymore. Think about some of your best friends over your life. The ones that are still with you, you've been through some really tough times with. And they've forgiven you, and you've forgiven them, and you've figured a way to work through all of those all of those tense moments, and that's why they're still your best friend. But think about those best friends, those good friends that you have, that when tough times came, they're gone. They just, whatever it is. I remember I was early 20s, and I had my best friend at the time. We hunted together, we trapped together, we raced cars. I mean, we did we did race cars. We did all of these crazy things together. So every weekend we lived, he lived near where Joanne lived, and I was 45 minutes to an hour drive away. But every weekend, every chance we got, we hung out, and we were living life, having so much fun, until the day I asked Joanne out, not knowing that he really had a crush on her. And our best friend status can do no wrong. Now it's like, you are my mortal enemy. I didn't see it coming. I mean, it was the very same weekend. I just mentioned, hey, I'm taking Joanne out. And the room went deathly quiet. And I realized at that moment, that good friendship that I had enjoyed was severed. Paul and Barnabas are being exalted like gods. Read in this next verse with me. But the Jews came from Antioch and Iconium and persuaded the crowds. They stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing that he was dead. But the disciples gathered around him. He rose up and entered the city, and on the next day he went on with Barnabas to Derbe. Now think about this. They were calling him a god. They were calling Paul Hermes, the messenger. They were calling him I think that he spoke with passion and power. When you look at Hermes and the history and what the belief around that god is, he was like the Nike. He was like the fastest. He was like the best speaker. He was the communicator. Hermes was Zeus's son, according to mythology. This guy was like, that's who you want to be. Not Thor, you want to be Hermes. Now, I don't see any movies coming with, Hermes. I'm not sure that Hermes is going to be a new superhero that's going to come through Marvel. But Paul went from elevated status of a god, lowercase g, god in human form, to now we got stones in our hands and we're going to kill you. As a matter of fact, they stoned him. Now, when you think about stoning, this isn't like getting hit with a car. This isn't like falling off of a four-story building where blunt force trauma that quick and it's done. This is stones being thrown at you from every direction. This is people with angry voices and screams wailing things at you. This would be a barbaric moment for Paul to understand, I'm going to die. Not in a good way, but here's almost all stonings. Here's how they ended: with blunt force trauma to the head. Because you can withstand some blows to the body, and it can break some bones, and it can do lots of damage. But where death was, they knew once you go down, once your head is unprotected, that is the vulnerable spot. And I know it's gross, but they went for the head. They went for the kill. When they were satisfied, there's always somebody that wants to get the last stone in, right? Last word, last stone. There's always, you see it on the movies, somebody shoots somebody and it's just like, shoot them twice more for good measure. Why? I think it was probably that they were convinced that their stoning, that Paul had suffered and endured enough bodily trauma and enough head trauma that he was dead. They drug him out of the city. Now, this is where I get excited, because there was a church there. There was a family. There was a people of God there, because it wasn't just Barnabas that stood beside him. It says in that text that was there just a minute ago, it says that the apostles, the disciples came and gathered around him. And he got up. He got up. Now, Scripture doesn't say that they killed him. They supposed that they killed him. I happen to personally believe that God restored life to him. I believe there was enough people involved in that stoning that had seen enough death through stoning that they probably weren't mistaking when they drug him out of the city and saying he's dead. I believe that God raised him up. And then what does he do? Like a glutton for punishment? He goes back into that city. Let's finish up our verses. Oh, that was it. Well, let me just read this last verse then. After they gathered around him, the next day they left for Derbe. The next day. Again, just a reminder, this is the Galatian area. This is the area where the Galatian churches were. This church that gathered around Paul, that didn't leave with him, would be the church in Lystra that would grow and develop and continue to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. Paul got up from, it was pretty graphic in the description, but he got up from that, went back into the city, spent the night, got up the next morning, and left for Derbe. What gave him the authority and the power to do that? It was the gospel of Jesus Christ. See, there's nothing that can stop the gospel. When we think about the gospel of Jesus Christ, it should motivate us and compel us to tell and to share that good news with everyone that we meet, everyone that we come across. Whether it's living it out, or whether it's sharing a verse, or whether it's an encouragement, whether it's a pat on the back, whatever that is, remembering the good news. Remembering the good news is where it's at. And we're not going to leave you today. We're not going to leave you today without reminding you of the good news.